Now, the long, long story of British colonialism, women from Asia travelled all over the world, some of them as maids or child carers, often both. Typically, well-off English families living in Asia would transport this support system with them. Some of the women moved permanently with their families. They were not quite slaves, although some most definitely were. They were usually indentured labour, little freedom, little protection or rights. They were the first migrant domestic workers. These early ayahs, as the Indian women were called, and amas, who were mostly from China, have slipped through the pages of our histories. There's more awareness of them in the UK. A lot went there. An unknown number also came to Australia. And that's the subject of a fascinating research project that's underway to track down their stories and acknowledge their contributions. Victoria Haskins is the lead chief investigator. That Victoria is a very formal title. She's a professor of history at the University of Newcastle and coordinator of the Purai Global Indigenous History Centre. Swapna Banerjee is a partner investigator on this project, is professor of South Asian history at Brooklyn College and the Graduate Centre of the City University of New York. They are both world authorities on colonial domestic servitude. Thank you both so much for joining.
Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Victoria, let's start with you. I think you may have found the extraordinary case study of the first AR to come to Australia.
Yeah, this is a quite an exciting discovery to try to find the women who came from India to Australia is a needle in a haystack kind of work. And one of the things I started to do is to look at stories that we already know a little bit about, to see whether there might have been domestic workers buried in those stories. And I did come across this in the story of the Brown family in early colonial New South Wales. And it starts in 1816 when a merchant from Calcutta called William Brown decides to set up in the colony of New South Wales and comes out here with some Indian workers, Indian indentured workers that he brought from Bengal. Mm. And over the coming months and years, he brought out a number of others, and also his wife joined him in 1818. Then in 1819, he ends up before the bench of magistrates in New South Wales, charged with accusations of ill treatment against his Indian workers. And over 4 days, they hear the judges hear depositions from those Indian workers about the ill treatment, and the charges are found to be proven, and the Indian workers are sent back to Calcutta. The Indian government then resolves that they're going to sort of take measures to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. And this story is a story that's kind of known in histories of Indian immigration to Australia. But when I went back and looked more closely at that story and looked at the depositions, I worked out that actually there was quite a number of women involved in that story. Mm. And in fact, the workers who were taking the lead in bringing those complaints to the authorities were domestic workers. And of those workers, three of them were women household workers. The lead one was Thomasy, who I believe was the first Australian ayah, and two girls who were called slave girls, called Buckton and Paree. So I found that story and found it extremely interesting.
And for this point, if nothing else, that here we have in the instance of Thomasy, someone with the resolve to take this to Australian authorities. That's an act of, I suspect, remarkable courage.
Yeah, it's a great story about the whole coming together of the workers to coordinate. They also managed to get coordination with the farm workers, including some women who are working on the farm as well, and they all came together to bring their complaints to the authorities.
What do we know about Thomasy? What do we know about her story?
Well, we're still looking for Thomasy, and Shropna's been really helpful for me to try to work out some of the background for some of these servants. Thomasy came into the household of Sophia Brown, the wife, around about 1805, 1806, and she would have been a child then. And the two younger girls also came in at that time. The two younger girls were known to be orphans. Thomasy, I'm not sure. We're trying to work that out.
Shropna, the sources here must be hard to untangle, I imagine.
Yeah, that's a very nice way of putting it, Jonathan. Yes, it's a kind of a exploratory research investigation that we have launched into the background and the history of these traveling ayahs. The term ayah actually goes back to 18th century, and it comes from Portuguese, and it also has variants in Spanish and Latin, meaning tutors, mothers, grandmothers. So basically caring woman figures. Thomasy could be coming from a Portuguese lineage. She could be a Catholic, which is possible because that's where the ayahs originally came from that lineage. But it's also possible that Thomasy is not Thomasy, but Thomasy. And Thomasy in the Indian language, in India has many languages, of course, but if we go back to its Sanskrit root, it means dark, from the word Thomas in Sanskrit. Thomas means dark. So we have to trace her lineage. We have to do further research to know what her origin was.
Shropna, I wonder if you could indulge us and perhaps read a little from Thomasy's deposition in this New South Wales court.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I came from India with Mrs. Brown. I was a ladies' dresser, worked needlework, etc. She used to beat me most shamefully on the slightest occasion if I forgot to do anything. Mr. John Brown beat me twice, but never beat me here in Australia. I was beat by Mrs. Brown at the farm. I never got any wages nor clothes. Such clothes as I had were given me by Mrs. Brown's friends. When I did not work, I got no food.
It's an appalling circumstance. And I mean, the interesting thing, Shropna, around the timing here is that, of course, slavery is still legal through British colonies.
That's absolutely correct. Yes. Slavery was abolished in 1807 when the British Parliament takes a stand to make slavery rampant in transnational trade, but it was still prevalent in India. So the British Parliament makes it illegal for British ships to transport slaves and for British colonies to import them. But on the other hand, it is when this entire episode was unfolding, 1818, 1819, it falls within the cusp when slavery was abolished and indentured labor, which would soon replace slavery, was yet to be introduced. So indentured labor would be introduced in 1834. And this case itself, this Thomas Brown's case with his servants, that became one of the cornerstones for the Australian government to argue against indentured labor.
And how does that unfold, Victoria? Because I'm wondering what was that story, but also what was the reputation of the Browns as a consequence of this court action? Was it enhanced, or was there sympathy for their plight?
Oh, that's really hard to find evidence around that. But sometimes when you look at the depositions and reading between the lines, you get a sense of the humiliation that the Browns would have experienced at that time. The depositions don't actually show the questions that were asked, and they don't show very much responses from Mr. Brown and nothing from Mrs. Brown. You've got to remember that Australia, the little settler colony of Australia, is a very, it's a funny place because it's a convict colony and it's very small, and there's not very many respectable people there at all. The Browns wanted to be respectable, and they saw themselves as different. From from the rest of the colony. So, yeah, very, very awkward, very humiliating, I think, the whole thing.
You're listening to Victoria Haskins there from Newcastle University in New South Wales, and joining us as well is Professor Swapna Banerjee from City University of New York. And they, together, are investigating the largely forgotten histories of colonial ayahs and amas, childcare as maids from different parts of Asia, working in this little colony of New South Wales. Let's paint, Swapna, a broader picture. The ayahs, this is, I mean, the word starts appearing in the 1700s. How does this story start? How does this movement begin?
Yeah, it's very, very interesting in the sense ayahs were a distinctive professional category of female domestic workers. And they were represented mainly as native nursemaids, the female caregivers of children, especially in the European households in India. So India has a very long history and genealogy of domestic service from the antiquity to the present. But ayahs, among them, occupy a very distinctive position because of their connection to European households.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, it acquired different meanings and significance. In the present context, ayah is a term that is used to represent caregivers, not a regular domestic worker, but especially concerned with caregiving to the elderly or children. And the ayah has entered the common vocabulary of Indian languages, but the ayah stands. And ayahs are a very, very dominant feature of India's current economy, to the extent that after India's liberalization from 1990s, India has witnessed a booming business with ayah centers, which basically is an office or multiple of offices of registered caregivers from which ordinary households or Indians of all caste, class, age, denominations, ethnicity, they hire their domestic workers because they have a credential. They have a background check for these caregivers who common people are hiring as domestic labor.
Okay, there's the backstory. And Victoria, I mean, we see here, I guess, you know, and this is in India as much as the Australian experience, the colonial power taking advantage of an almost an existing social structure to some extent and then exporting that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it's interesting the ayahs don't kind of emerge as an occupational category really in India until you start getting Europeans setting up in India. So this really seemed to be part of the whole colonization process. And I know Swapna's written quite a lot on that, because domestic service in India used to be dominated by men and remained with a lot of male domestic workers. But the ayahs were really part of the sort of colonial process. I mean, I found out about this when I was working on another project on male domestic workers in Asia Pacific with Claire Lowry, who's also an investigator on this project. And as part of that, I was looking in the British Library records for Indian male domestic workers travelling. And I came across these records of the travelling ayahs in England. And I was really struck by that story, which I wasn't aware of that before, because in my own family history, my great-grandmother's grandmother had a story about being accompanied by an ayah when she was a child from India back to Scotland. And I'd always thought that that was a bit of a fantasy and a made-up story. And then I saw in the British Library these records of these travelling ayahs, and I thought, oh, my goodness, there was actually a whole history of travelling ayahs. And I wanted to return to that. And then, of course, I wanted to find out more about the ayahs who came to Australia. So that's sort of where it came from. But definitely the British needed them in India to run their households. And then they found when they wanted to go travelling around empire, which they did quite a lot of, They needed them with them when they travelled, and so they carted them here and there. But the women themselves took the opportunities that were there to travel as well. So it's not just a being dragged along kind of story. They actually become sort of semi-professional in that travelling, particularly the ones going to England.
Well, and coming here too, and this, I mean, we began with the Browns in the early 19th century, but even into the 20th century, we have exemptions under the White Australian Policy, the Immigration Restriction Act, to allow the entry of Ayahs and Amahs into this country. So it's a very entrenched pattern of behaviour.
Yes, and in more recent news, a few years ago, there was an issue about au pairs coming in.
Yes.
And that rings a few bells. But, yes, there was sort of exceptions for domestic servants to come with people into Australia. And that's also partly to do with the idea about what's real labour and what's not. And domestic work has never really been quite valued or respected as real labour, and that's allowed a sort of window here for these kind of exemptions. So yeah, I'm actually researching at the moment exemptions for women coming into Australia with families during World War One, and Claire is doing some work on the women who came, the Amahs who came into Australia during World War II with the evacuation of Singapore.
Tell us more about the Amahs, because we've spoken about the lack of information around the Ayahs, but in the case of the Amahs, that's even more so.
Yeah, the Amahs are very little known. I was pretty excited to find in the Mitchell Library a drawing of what looks like an Amah from the colonial period, but we can't really find very many Amahs coming into Australia in the colonial period. In the shipping records, much smaller numbers than Ayahs in the 19th century, but they start travelling to Australia in significant numbers from the 1920s, and they come in with these exemption certificates that you're talking about, usually for about a one-month period, and that would often be extended, and then they'd stay for between 1 and 4 months. But during World War II, more than 100 Amahs came in with evacuees coming from Hong Kong and Singapore and Malaya and other areas of Southeast Asia. And the most famous of these was a woman called Lau Gao, who came in with Douglas MacArthur, the American general from the American Philippines, and that became a very famous example of an Amah in Australia. But after the war, the immigration minister, then Arthur Cornwall, made it his sort of personal quest to force the Amahs to return. Mm. So we're also working on a particularly sensational story that occurred in that time period where it became a bit of a scandal about an Amah being forced to return, not because anything was bad, wasn't seen as bad for the Amah, it was seen as really awful for her employer to not have her servant with her anymore.
Broadly, Swapna, the representation of these women is such an interesting and complex thing. Here are caregivers, women who were devoted to the children in their care, and yet...
Yes, and what is very interesting is that, you know, we heard the deposition by Tamasi, who really talks about a dismal, appalling treatment by her employers. And this is not uncommon, even in the present. But what is very important for us is that in most of the records, the Ayahs or Indian nursemaids, they really occupy a special place in colonial and imperial imaginaries. So children of British officials who grew up in India, they memorialized their native caregivers who fed them, who cleaned them, who played with them, told them stories, sung lullabies, and put them to sleep. And concurrently with this kind of representations, which is heavily sentimentalized and romanticized and full of nostalgia, there are also visual representations of the Ayahs, which are more striking. And that's something that Victoria and I and Claire have unearthed over the course of our research. So, one of the recent acquisitions of the Metropolitan Museum of Art is that of an ayah who comes from Bengal, the same area from where we get Tamasi and Bhaktin and Pari. They're coming from the same region. And it is a portrait of an ayah, apparently of Portuguese origin, but she's very elegantly posed. And the portrait was done by a British artist, William Mood, in 1872. And so there are many other, visual evidence of many pictures, photographs that traveled all over the world of these ayahs. We do not know much about their background, or even their names, but they are visually present. In my recent trip to one of the museums in Massachusetts, which has a collection of South Asian artifacts, I saw a figurine of an Indian ayah with a European child. So ayahs traveled globally.
It's a network.
Well, very interesting.
Speaking of global, I mean, Victoria, you've got this ARC research grant last year, and you both had plans to travel India, Singapore, England for research. Yes, we know what happened there. Now, you're hoping, though, that among Australians, perhaps, dear listener, this may be your experience. They may be family stories. What should people do if they have something to tell you about an ama or an ayah?
Oh, we would so much love to hear from those people. And yeah, we're not very mobile ourselves now, are we, Shwapna? We were planning to go to India to try to find descendants of some of the ayahs. We know that they had children. And so we really like to follow those kind of stories, but that'll have to wait for now. But if people would like to talk to us, we'd love to hear from them. I'm easy to find because I'm at the University of Newcastle, so you can find me on the webpage. And we have a blog, very easy to remember blog. It's Ayahs and Amas, all one word. We can be contacted through that blog as well.
Well, look, we'll put a link to that on the story page for this conversation as well. So, look, if you have a tale.
Love to hear from descendants of the Brown family, who are such an interesting family. I didn't mention before, but one of the twists in the tale is this was possibly one of the very earliest Anglo-Indian households in Australia. Both William and his wife, Sophia, both of them had Indian mothers, which, of course, gives it another
twist to the tale. Yeah. Victoria Swapner, thank you so very much. What an extraordinary world to begin to explore. And listener, if you have an experience, that blog is the place to go. You've been listening to Victoria Haskins, Professor of History at the University of Newcastle, and Swapna Banerjee, Professor of South Asian History at Brooklyn College and the Graduate Centre of the City University of New York, and the research project, Ayahs and Amas, Transcolonial Servants in Australia and Britain, 1780 to 1945. Link on the Late Night Live page on the Radio National website.